in esports, it's very easy to look at it from the outside as just competitive games and just tournaments for the best players. That's often the way in the media it's presented, so it's just a tournament that's gathering the best players, we're going to see who wins. They don't understand that there's a scene there, there's a history to it, there's a community, people who join into the scene are buying into this history and knowing who the champions before them are and understanding the context of where they are in the scene, and it becomes a huge narrative. It takes over people's lives. And so as a result, you don't just see how good someone is at a video game. You see through how they compete the whole scene, from a whole year, a tournament circuit, losing here, beating this guy but not getting past the semis at this point, playing with different teammates, developing over their career, their style gets refined, they go through slumps. You actually get to see who these people are. Essentially, there's a great quote that says something along the lines of, your character is your destiny. I think it was like a quote from like some like ancient, what would they be called, just like the elders of somewhere in like North America or something, you know, some ancient wise men. It's like your character is your destiny. The notion is like who you are, how you think about the world, how you've worked on yourself is actually going to be part of your results. Yes, your talent's going to be attenuating the results, and how hard you work will have something to do with it. But the people who tend to come second or never get over a certain hurdle, even when they have the talent, sometimes more than enough talent, overflowing talent, to accomplish more or to be the best and can't do it, it tends to be something about them and them as a person and their character and their flaws and the weaknesses they haven't been able to overcome and mental blocks they have or things they deny or aspects about their team where they're really good and they're doing their role right, but they think this teammate's failing me, but they haven't learned how to integrate him into the system or make him feel comfortable so that he'll be able to play, contribute a little bit and not facilitate them being better, or vice versa. They might be the role player and they might think this really great player on their team's too toxic and he puts them down and they have to find a way to get through to him and forge relationships. And so what's interesting is one of the most fascinating topics in esports to me is this notion of the person who they could succeed. They have the talent, they have the ability, they have the drive, the desire, but something means they fail. Maybe one of those three or four things they don't have. Like, yeah, it's easy to see, like the most simple thing to appreciate in esports is the great player, the best player, the one who has incredible talent. You can just aesthetically see he's wonderful, incredible, plays with grace, skill, power, precision. You can see all that. That's very, even the layman can catch onto that. And he can appreciate why that's so brilliant, because he can see in contrast to his opponent, he's doing it better than him. He's doing it more effectively, doing it more efficiently. He's just got more force. He's making that guy play to his game. That's easier to see. Although I still think, obviously, the more you know about the game, the more you'll appreciate that guy. But that's understood as a baseline that everyone to a degree is enjoying whoever's the best in that sense. And one of the things that's difficult to see is that when the great player succeeds in that way, it's not just that you have the great player who does it and he succeeds and he gets over all this stuff. And then there's the guy where he had the talent to be the great player, the success, he was in position, he maybe even beat that guy sometimes, but he never quite had as much success, never quite got, never achieved to the level he could have, should have, didn't meet expectations, fell at certain moments over and over again, where look, he choked or something went wrong. It's easy to look at that guy and think, right, these are two different people. One's a born winner, one's a born loser, end of story. You're just not clutch, you haven't worked hard enough, or you've got a bad attitude. What you might not realize is, first of all, a lot of those great players, some of the greatest players of all time, in fact, when I think through history, some of the greatest players of all time in every esport game actually themselves were the other guy at one point in time. They had some problem early in their career. They had some block. They had some area that was a weakness that they thought, oh, if I just hope that doesn't happen and my strength works out. And they would get so far, but then always somehow that would come up, the weakness. Some enemy who could attack that, could exploit that. They might exploit it themselves in as much as they'd fall apart mentally or there'd be some block for them. Oftentimes, the process of overcoming that is what makes the greatest player ever. Because at that point, he's worked on all his weaknesses. He's honest with himself about what his problems are. He's started to develop them. He's pursuing his craft, honing the fundamentals of certain areas so there's not as much luck involved because he's making his game more consistent along with the skill. He's working on his teammates. He's working on his philosophy for how the game should be played and being reasonable but being confident at the same time. Working on all aspects, and then he becomes the best. Even though talent-wise, he might have had the same talent at the beginning when he was failing, as the guy that becomes the greatest ever afterwards. The talent aspect might not change that much. You might not have to work on his skills that much. Might be everything else, and that might make him sports. Like, a great example that made me think of this topic was, I was reading about Andy Murray, and Andy Murray is one of the best tennis players in the world. Like, right now, I think he's ranked, like, second or third. Actually, that can't be right. I think he's at fourth, actually. He's ranked top four, anyway. And in history, he's made a lot of finals. He's made something like, I think he's made like 10 finals or something like that. Can that even be right? Maybe 8 finals. I think it might be 8 finals he's made of Grand Slams, these massive tournaments. Now, some of the greatest players of all time, some of them might be only nearing 8 or so finals in terms of all-time great players, like your top 15 sort of players. Some of those won't be that high. But out of those 8, he's only won 2. He's only won 2 finals. Now, why is he only won 2 out of that many? Now listen, yes, he's played some of the, like in every final for a start, he's played Roger Federer or Novak Djokovic, who were some of the greatest players ever, way above him on the ladder. But that's one factor as to why he isn't winning. But that's the thing. He's beaten Federer in finals before, in big matches before. He's beaten Djokovic in finals. If he can do this, why can't he win these majors on more of a regular basis? There's always been a mental aspect with Andy Murray. He's always fell down in this particular sense. And so when it was brought up years in the past, the idea that he should try a sports psychologist, he actually said that he'd tried one, but that he didn't think it was worth it. Like he said, like I have a quote I've written down here. He said, "I don't think counting to 10 helps when you're playing in the semi-finals of a Grand Slam or at centre court at Wimbledon against one of the best athletes in the world." And the idea that he's saying there is like, he'd obviously be given this technique that if he was in trouble and he was like, he's having problems, then they would tell him like, just count to 10, just let you know, focus on that. And then he would do it. And then he'd say, well, that didn't help me. Like I didn't, the points still went wrong. And that, and plus, why is that going to help me? Like, does that guy need to count to 10? And what do you know about playing it? You know, he's taking all these implications from it. And then he also said that the problem is that a sports psychologist, here's another quote, doesn't know what it feels like or the best way to deal with things because they haven't been there. Now this is when he was much younger, by the way, but these are very natural, obvious pieces of rhetoric to use. But if you actually think about what the sports psychologist is trying to do there, I'll try and reverse engineer the approach here, okay? So telling him to count to 10 when he's in a big moment, the idea there is not, the goal is not just to be able to say inside his head, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's not the goal. What they're really trying to accomplish here is to find a way to take all that's going on and all the thoughts that could be going in his mind and for a moment, shut them out or put them in the background. Because by thinking about the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, first of all, it's getting you into a rhythm. You're calming down a little bit. Your heart rate goes down a bit. You're breathing in and out. You're not thinking so much about the other stuff, which will still be there. Some of those thoughts will still be rattling around in your brain and firing in and trying to interrupt, as anyone who's ever tried meditation will know. But for at least a moment or to a degree, you're kind of lessening the noise a little bit. You're going to focus on this a tiny bit. This is something where he's missed the point of it in that sense. This would help you. This is a very, very simplistic form of meditation, essentially, in terms of that the psychologist guy doesn't know what it's like to be there. That's another problem with this concept, which is going to pervade into esports as we see people trying to get these psychologists. They're going to think, well, he's never played in a big pressure league or match. He doesn't know what it's like. No, that's the whole point, though, is that he's studied, in theory, what people are like under pressure in all sorts of situations. Snipers in the army, people who are in boxing matches and they're losing, animals when they're in certain fight or flight type modes. They've studied these situations. They know what happens to the body. They know what happens to the mind. They know techniques for what you can do to calm the body down, to center the mind. They've studied these aspects. Whether they've been in that situation is irrelevant because they've studied it and they can give you things that can help you. And they, you know what? They can question you. They can get to know you. They can analyze you. They can see, does something different happen to you from other people in that situation? They can start trying to give you answers, some help with that. This is some of the things that are going to need to happen, okay? A sports psychologist, what he can do for someone in esports. First of all, like I just said there, he can examine the player directly. He can start to look before we get into the other things, because the problem with a lot of this aspect is the psychological aspect is also going to be like emotional things, things that have happened in the past, the way you think of yourself. So one of the things he's going to have to do, he's going to have to look at the player and examine him directly. He's going to have to say, what is this guy's goals? What drives him? And this is going to be something he's going to ideally question the player and get answers back, and they're going to work through it together. And the psychologist isn't going to say, oh, this is what drives you and this is your goals. He's going to listen and he's going to try and help that guy come to these conclusions himself and figure out for himself the process of who is he and what does he want to accomplish and what's really driving him there. Like, is he being driven there out of a fear of failure that if I don't become the best, then it'll never mean anything? These are interesting things that if you can get to the bottom of them, this can maybe help you unravel the problems that you're facing. Whereas on the surface, you just look at it like, oh, for some weird reason, I always just miss that serve when I'm in that situation. Or, you know, when I'm in a League of Legends match there, like, listen, normally I'm really great at hitting skill shots, but I just whiff them there and I flash too early and I fucked it up. And no, what's the causes for that? What emotional state were you in? What mental aspects were going on? What were the internal voices saying to you? How did you go into the match? So again, he's going to ask him, what happens when he faces difficult situations? What's this guy's mentality? When he's against a better opponent, how does he conceptualize how the matchup will go before he plays it? Does he think of like, oh, this is what could happen? This is what does he? If it's a better play, does he think, oh, I just hope that doesn't happen, and goes into it with a kind of like a worried state already? Is he able to just think of like, well, here's the things that he could do, and here's the things I can do, and here's how what I'll try and steer the game towards? Is he intimidated by better players? If he plays a better player, is his whole game predicated on being the best, on believing he...
I could actually understand from my own position of having done so many interviews, that in itself might be trickier than people realise, because often esports competitors are much younger than sports, but they're not 28 and have lived a whole life and done all this. They're often quite... Essentially, even if they're like 19 in the game, I often say, they spent a lot of the time in their bedroom being a nerd, so they're often like emotionally maybe even more immature. And so I actually have found in history, just when I do interviews, sometimes I'm shocked that players, even just about their career, aren't that reflective, or they haven't thought back on something, or they haven't tried to wonder why did I perform in this team but not this other one. It's more, they're almost shocked when you put the question to them. It's like the first time they're thinking about it. Have you found this approach also? I mean, again, I did the extreme before of, do they just deny it and they don't want it? But I'm sure it's also the case that some of them have just never tried this, right? Some of them really did just think simple thoughts like, oh, I lost that game because my aim wasn't good, or I was feeling bad, or I didn't get enough sleep. They haven't really thought through things like, but why do I make these choices, or why do these things happen to me? And I imagine it's actually a brand new thing for them, right?
I mean, just to add on, is that if people, players or athletes, they don't tend to be dismissive right away.
Right.
I mean, it's obviously a different feel and something new for them. And sometimes obviously there's doubts, and I understand that it's all new for them. And then suddenly this person from the outside comes in and, you know, starts talking about, hey, maybe this is something relevant, or maybe there's something, you know, to reflect upon. But that's the most important part, is just start reflecting. You know, when I come in, I don't have all the answers. As you said, that's just not a magic drink. It's not a magic pill or magic dust or whatever to I come in and everything is fixed. It is a lot of work that you have to do yourself in that sense. So yeah, so that's one thing that I want to dismiss, is that or say that people are not usually that dismissive, but they have some pre-assumptions. That's maybe the better word, is the pre-assumptions of what sports psychology is and how we work with it, and what is my role when I come in, is and what is required to actually become better or develop. It's not just on one person. It's not just pointing fingers and saying, oh, he has to do better. It's always starts with yourself. It always starts with, okay, but what can I do? What can I do firstly to develop myself, but what can I do to help my teammate? And there's also this thing that very often asking these questions, it is, you know, it comes as a shock for people, because it's simple questions. It's simple questions of, okay, but why? Why is this important to me? Why am I thinking this way? Which maybe they're not really used to do. So in that sense, that's also what I mean when I'm saying that I don't want to only develop the player. I also want to develop the person behind the player, because it's very rare that the person actually gets the space to develop. Okay, but what do I like outside of playing? And even in a team, sometimes we're having team talks where people are saying that it's not as much about what we talk about. It's actually just getting to know my teammates on a personal level. It's getting to understand, why do they think like they do? Instead of having these assumptions, oh, he said this because of, you know, this. I come from this culture. That's what it means to me. No, it means something different to this person on an individual level, but also maybe on a cultural level. So pretty often it's about, you know, getting to learn, like the person has to learn himself or herself, obviously, before we can actually move on into these higher levels or these small percentages that people talk about improvement in order to be able to perform when it really matters.
An interesting thing to make a point of is, even when I'm critical of these people in my work, because that's part of my job, and I think that's part of what I think I need to do. That's something that I think is important to my work, to be honest, and to articulate where these guys are failing and where the problems are. And I think it's good to be like, oh, get him next time, champ. You'll do well. I think you don't help a guy by doing that. You'll notice I never BM these people directly. I never go right at them and fuck with them and get in their heads. It's not something I do. In fact, what people don't know, and I'm not going to tell which players I've done this with, many players who I've seen have these issues, at an event, I'll try talking to them a little bit. I'll just try striking up a little good conversation, see if they're friendly, see if there's someone who's on a similar wavelength to me, maybe send them a tweet or something. And if they're open to it, if it's not something that like you'd be forcing on them, then I'll give them some words of encouragement, or I'll talk to them. A lot of them I've recommended books to, or if they're not book readers, documentaries or movies, things that some of them, they might not even understand why I'm doing it, but the underlying theme there is about this self-discovery, is about finding your weaknesses, is about understanding how to believe in yourself, how to trust in a teammate. Give them these tools where if they then take it, I'm only just offering it, I can't do anything with it. If they take it, they could then achieve something incredible themselves and it would be all them. Now, the problem with this whole topic is to, again, you have to take it from the gaming aspect and put it in real life. And that's where you see the big problem. Because as people, a lot of us have these problems. A lot of us have these flaws. We're all flawed people. We're all broken in some sense. That's the conceit about modern society that is ridiculous. It's the notion that there's 90% normal people and 10% broken people. No, the 10% are the ones who are broken so badly that they are like mental problems where they can't even hold it together and do the basic conceits of society like politeness and dressing themselves in hygiene and having a job and stuff. The rest of the 90%, most of those guys are being tortured to some degree, have pain, have an existential hole in themselves. This is something I found has been an important part of developing my own life, is to accept that this exists within everyone in modern society. It's a problem we have. I mean, unfortunately, when I've made jokes along those lines, people get super butthurt because they thought it was like a diss or whatever. But everyone has these existential holes, everyone, from every culture. And part of the reason why is because modern life doesn't fill some of those deep needs or holes or facilitate what we need as people. That's why you get people who, they're just lost in life. Or they're lost and they just say, all right, well, what are the rules to this game that I'm playing? Oh, this is what you're supposed to do. Get a kids, a job, wife, dog. I've done all those things. Fuck, what next? Is that it? Is it the end of my life now? And then I just retire and I die. Like, what I'm supposed to, you know, that doesn't feel fulfilling, this quest. That's why, because they didn't have something to pursue, a craft. They didn't have something that they were drawn to, that they needed to do, something that, about themselves, which is what those vehicles are for, that they needed to develop. They wanted to look inside themselves and develop that and to explore new aspects of themselves, because work, family, social life, these things keep them too busy. These things keep them distracted, keep them ticking over. There's a lack in their life of meaningful rituals, of things that give them points in their life to stop and look at things and look at it from outside perspective and go, wow, fucking look how crazy this is. Look what I'm going to have to do here. And if I want to get to this point here, I'm going to have to make this huge leap. There's a lack of things to help them get these positions. There's nowhere to go. There's a lack of paths, naturally, we think, that they're obvious to pursue. A lack of areas that encourage self-discovery. That's why the occult, the psychedelic, the art impulses within societies have always bubbled to the surface, or have always been there under the surface if you knew where to seek. That's why that whole thing of like, find the others, find the people who can help you pursue these things, who you resonate with, who have something about them where you can sense that there's something important going on there, and that's what you want in your life, or you want to be inspired by that. That's another thing. People get misunderstand inspiration. They see like a musician who's brilliant and they think, oh, since I can feel how brilliant his music is, I can feel how wonderful it makes me feel, that means that to be inspired means I have to be a musician and I need to make music like him. You've missed the point completely. The point is to understand, separated from the music, what was driving that music? What did he develop out himself to be able to express it into music there? And find in yourself what would be the aspect that you're drawn to. Is it some artistic output? Is it something about society? Do you need to help certain types of people? Whatever it might be, you develop that similar thing in yourself and then you express it in a way that makes sense for you, your life, and your skill set. And that's what these players are trying to do. And that's what these players who are so talented and so good and have everything going for them, but they fuck up because they're like ours. They're all flawed. They've all got these holes and they're trying to find a way, a process to get through it all. And if they do, just like people become better people and become seemingly enlightened or become wonderful people and accomplish incredible feats and overcome great challenges, so these players go from being talented but failures to being the greatest players ever, to succeeding. And everyone can do that in their life if they can acknowledge this path and don't just see it as a game. See that that is just someone who's expressing that human potential through a game, instead of an instrument, instead of through business, instead of through some kind of artistic.
Since time immemorial, great artists have been supported by patrons who believed in their work and wanted to contribute to their efforts. Well, what's more fitting than the greatest esports content artist being supported by my patrons, the Skrilluminati? So this video and the others on my channel was kindly supported by Toucan, Nikki, Jason, Jensen Gore, and you know it. A special thanks always goes out to Jerky's Minion. Would you like to ask a question in my video AMA? Want teasers? See who the upcoming guests are? Maybe you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my content, or take part in one of those lengthy discussions where you get to set the topic. If any of these perks appeal to you or others, put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today. Where? In the description box, there is a Patreon link.